Quick math, beauties. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything just costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Jillian. That's netsuite.com/Jillian. netsuite.com/Jillian.
When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Hey guys, I know we're all working so hard to stay fit and healthy at home. So check out my app. I have free daily 7-minute workouts. Download the app. It's Jillian Michaels Fitness app. Download it. Do the 7-minute workouts. You don't need any equipment. There's total body workouts, ab workouts, leg workouts. You get a new one every single day. And if you want more, obviously, there's a heck of a lot more in the app. There's over 1,000 different exercises. All of my DVD workouts are in the app. I can customize a workout for you in the app. There's freaking yoga, kickboxing, HIIT training, outdoor runs, bodyweight training, free weights. There are thousands of recipes, no matter what your diet preferences are. But at the very least, please do the 7-minute workouts for free.
Welcome to Keeping It Real Conversations with Jillian Michaels. Jillian Michaels, what do we have today?
Today we have Dr. Anna Blakeney. She is an assistant professor at the University of British Columbia and a former research fellow at the Imperial College of London. And she comes to us through a group of scientists and doctors, a global group called Team Halo. And these are the individuals in real time that are developing these vaccines, studying these vaccines on COVID, of course, getting the word out about vaccines. She personally is part of a multidisciplinary group of engineers, immunologists, and molecular biologists. Listen to this. Investigating the interactions between RNA biomaterials and the immune system to prevent and treat disease. Okay, so the long and the short of it is that she is one of the top badasses doing the... Here, okay, now let me speak English. So Dr. Blakeney is one of the top badasses understanding these viruses, obviously, in particular, COVID, the variety of COVID strains. And we are going to be talking to Dr. Blakeney today about all of it. What are these different strains of COVID popping up? Do we need to worry about them? How are they different? What are the differences in all four of the COVID vaccines? Is one better than another? How long do they last? Do they work on the variety of different strains out there? Any and every single freaking question you could think of about the COVID-19 vaccine, Dr. Blakeney is going to answer. And I've had so many questions myself, and it's very difficult because you get so much conflicting information in the media, and so much of it is like fear-mongering and headlines and scare tactics. And I just wanted to get one of the most qualified individuals on the show to answer these questions for us.
Yeah. Schminders. Yeah. This is good. I mean, it's it's always, you see different things on the news and it's, you know, you Google everything you can, but it's really nice to hear it straight from a researcher's mouth, you know?
Exactly.
Somebody involved in it.
I mean, and I personally, despite what's out there, for better or for worse, for true or for false, I have heard so much nonsense like, oh, you don't want that vaccine. That's dangerous. Oh, man, you know, you get those side effects. You know, that's so bad. It's like, well, so much.
Yeah, and you hear that about flu shots all the time. People are like, I got the flu. No, you didn't. But yeah. It's you know, how do you, you know, we can't tell people that. They don't believe us.
And that, well, nor should we, which is fair, right? It's like,
right, yeah.
That's the reason. We have Dr. Anna Blakeney on today to go over anything and everything there is to know about the vaccine so that you feel as best educated and informed so you can make the best steps forward for you and your family. I feel good. I feel proud of us. This is going to be a great one.
Hey, you've been trying to do this for a long time. We finally kicked it off.
We finally got the right person.
Yeah,
it was
that's
not
true.
Easy. All right, team. So with no further ado, we're going to have a quick break for our sponsors and be right back with Dr. Anna Blakeney talking all about COVID-19, the new strains, and all the vaccines. Everything you need to know. I've heard some people say they find water boring or flavorless or that they'd rather have soda, to which I say, don't you dare. Instead, just stock your fridge with Hello Water. It's fruit-flavored water with zero sugar, and it's infused with 5 grams of prebiotic fiber, so it's the perfect way to stay hydrated and up your fiber intake. Personally, I'm working my way through all the Hello Water flavors. I started with my favorite, black cherry, which is fantastic. And I just tried the pineapple coconut. It tastes so tropical. It's about as close as I'm going to get to a vacation right now. And best of all, Hello Water delivers wellness benefits for digestive health, immune defense, and your body's pH balance. So say goodbye to sugar and Hello Water today. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off your first order. So just head to HelloWater.com and use my promo code Jillian for 15% off right now. That's HelloWater.com, promo code Jillian. What's the secret to your best night's sleep? Well, first, toss out the memory foam and upgrade to Awara's natural and sustainable latex tapped from real rubber trees. No formaldehydes or toxic chemicals, just an extra 2 inches of plush contouring support that literally weighs evenly from head to toe so you feel like you're floating. I love mine. It's my dream mattress. Awara even uses super comfy organic New Zealand wool to promote cooling and airflow. Get $350 off plus for a limited time. Get $499 in free accessories. That's 2 natural latex pillows, cotton sheets, and a waterproof mattress protector with every mattress purchase at awarasleep.com/Jillian. And feel good knowing Awara plants 10 trees with every purchase. Sleep better knowing you just planted a small forest. To redeem, go to awarasleep.com/Jillian, and that's awarasleep.com/Jillian. All right, we are back with Dr. Blakeney. Dr. Blakeney, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
We have looked for an individual to come on and talk about this for quite some time. And then we were contacted by Team Halo about individuals like yourself getting the word out and educating people about vaccines. And I was like, oh my God, this is so serendipitous and perfect. And I was wondering if you could talk just a little bit briefly about what you're doing in a day. What is Team Halo? And then I have a list of questions a mile long for you. So,
yeah,
so gear up, Doc.
Sure. So yeah, I guess to start off with Team Halo. So it was originally started actually as a collaboration between the United Nations Verified Initiative and the Vaccine Confidence Project. And so the whole idea is to connect scientists and clinicians who are working on COVID-19 directly with the general public. And we do that over TikTok, which seems like a very counterintuitive way to spread information and educate people. But I think it's actually a really useful tool to be able to show people, you know, exactly how we make vaccines, how we test them, what it looks like to work in a lab, and who exactly these scientists are that are doing that. And so I actually think because, you know, on TikTok, it's like you have the option of 15 or 60 second videos. And so it's a very short, like digestible snippet of information, right? It's not like an hour long right. lecture of like, this is how it's evolved over time and like, listen to me lecture you. It has to be really short and engaging. And so I think it's actually a really great way for people to learn. I do have a real job outside of TikTok. So I am an assistant professor at University of British Columbia in the Michael Smith Labs in the School of Biomedical Engineering. So my research is on making vaccines, RNA vaccines specifically. So yeah, obviously very timely for the whole pandemic.
So Doc, could you speak a little bit about the different strains of COVID that we're now hearing about? And it's like Brazil and South Africa and then the UK. And it's like, how many of these are there? How different are they? Are some more nefarious than others? I know some are more contagious than others. And I wanted to kind of look at that first before we talk about the vaccines, because then it's like, does it work on everything? So before I jump in, can you educate us on this?
Yep. So the mutations and the different strains are actually really to be expected. So with every virus, it evolves and changes over time, because in the same way where, you know, humans are kind of trying to evolve and find better versions of ourselves so we're more able to cope with our environment, viruses are doing the same thing. So, you know, they're in a host, they're trying to make it so that they can survive better, infect more people, you know, whatever their MO is. So they change over time. You know, I think in the media, we often hear kind of really like fear-mongering stories about all these new mutations.
Yep.
And there's so many stories out there. And I think it's important to just, I know it's hard also for me, because I read these and I'm like, oh, this sounds so scary, like a really infectious new variant. But it's really actually quite hard to make those types of conclusions really early on. And so, you know, actually there's, you know, thousands, millions of mutations that are out there where, yeah, it's just, that's just how it goes. Like these viruses mutate. It doesn't necessarily mean they're much better or much worse. Lots of them are probably very similar to the original virus. And so, you know, that's why we continue to study it, right? So over time throughout the pandemic, I'm sure everybody knows it's like the testing and the sequencing at the beginning wasn't very good. And so over time, that's gotten better. And so, you know, now we have a better idea of what actual mutations are out there. And so I think that's why we're hearing more about it, is we're just more aware of it because we've tracked it. So really the important thing is that, you know, we're doing the studies, we're looking at the data to see, are they more infectious? Are they more deadly? I think we don't quite know yet. But what's really important is actually probably how the vaccines work on them.
Well, okay. So that brings me to my first question about the vaccines. And I have my list of the vaccines. So at this point, I think, are there four? I've got Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, and Johnson & Johnson. Am I accurate there? Am I missing any?
Yes, that's correct. So there's four different vaccines that have been approved in different places. So it depends on the country where you are as to what vaccines are approved.
Oh, wow.
But, okay. Yeah, which is, it's kind of crazy. But, you know, all of these regulators have kind of different rules that they adhere to. And so that's how, you know, they use those criteria to evaluate which vaccines to approve for their country. So the vaccines that are out there, there's two RNA vaccines and two viral vector vaccines that have been approved under what's called emergency use authorization so far. So they're not actually approved vaccines, but they've been basically approved for this emergency use.
Okay. So I have so many questions. Let just on their one answer, how are these things different? You said two are mRNA vaccines and two are viral vector vaccines. So first question is, what does that mean? And how are those two concepts different before we look at, you know, because I've heard like people are gossiping. They're like, oh, I got the Moderna. Oh, don't get the Pfizer. And I'm like, no, you guys don't know. You're a chef. You are a daycare. You have no idea. And it's like, it's so wild how like this game of like panic telephone. So So those two questions right away. What the hell does that mean? mRNA, viral vector, how is that concept different? And is one better than another?
Let's break it down by what are we actually trying to do with a vaccine, and then how do these work differently? So with any vaccine, we are trying to educate your immune system to recognize the virus before ever having seen the virus. So the point of this is that we're training your immune system to say, oh, that virus is not welcome here, shut it down before it infects you and makes you sick. So the way we train it is we have to give it a target. So this is a protein from the surface of the virus, which I think everybody has heard of now, called the spike protein. So if this is a viral particle, we just see, you know, it's decorating the surface of it. So it's on the outside of it, and it's, you know, the protein that the virus uses to enter cells. So we're trying to train your immune system to recognize that spike protein. And there's a number of ways we can get that protein into your body. So on the one hand, we can use messenger RNA or mRNA vaccines. So yeah, mRNA vaccines are basically the newest type of vaccines. So this is the first time they've ever been approved, but you know, not the first time they've ever been tested or experimented with before, actually. So
I thought this was like a whole new thing. And then everybody was like, oh, it's new. I don't know. So, anything new scares people.
Yeah. And I totally understand. But actually, the first RNA vaccine was shown to work in 1990, very coincidentally, the year I was born. So I think we kind of grew up together.
Wow.
And then the first RNA vaccine clinical trial in humans was started in 2013. So, you know, it's relatively new compared to these other technologies, but it's not brand new off the shelf. I think it's just, you know, even in the field of science, like even in vaccines, you know, rewind to a year ago, a lot of scientists didn't know about RNA vaccines. And so, of course, the public, the general public doesn't know about them. So I think it's just, it takes time for things to filter down from like academic labs and smaller companies into, I don't know, the zeitgeist, basically. With messenger RNA, we basically just introduce this RNA molecule into your cells. All of the cells in your body have messenger RNA in them. That's what they use. It's the code you use, kind of going from your DNA to encoding a protein. So we kind of just hijack that system by saying, okay, here's the RNA we want you to make. It's the protein from the surface of the virus. And then your cells make it. So they're kind of like our little factory that we employ. And then that trains your immune system to recognize the virus. So on the other hand, viral vectors are basically, you know, for both the Johnson & Johnson and the AstraZeneca vaccines, they basically repurposed a cold virus that is really good at getting actually DNA into your cells to make that protein. So using DNA instead of RNA, but the viral vector is just a impotent, like cold virus, basically. So it doesn't infect you, doesn't make you sick, but it's really good at getting into your cells and then also training your immune system.
So then is one better than another? It's like, and this also makes sense as to why some of my friends are getting all these crazy side effects. I'm like, oh, I feel like shit, and they're out for days. And then others are like, oh, it felt perfectly fine. So it's potentially the difference in the two different types of vaccines.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a great question. Like, I think a lot of people now are really like skirting around, like, which is better, because everybody's just on this mission of like really trying to, you know, promote vaccine confidence and make sure that people get these vaccines and like make sure, you know, when you have the option that you get it. But the way I think about it is, you know, there's kind of all different aspects that you can compare between the systems. And honestly, there's pros and cons to each of them, right? So, to me, the biggest one is the efficacy. So when we do the phase 3 clinical trial, how well does it protect people from getting COVID-19? And so actually in that realm, both of the RNA vaccines had an efficacy of greater than 94%. And that's
crazy, right?
Yeah,
that's insane.
It's crazy. Like, no, and it's also mind-blowing, because think about in the field, before last year, nobody had done a phase 3 trial with them before. So we didn't know how well they were going to work. And then they both end up working, you know, super well. Basically, like, you couldn't hope for better than that.
Wow.
Okay. So that makes me think to myself, though, even though you just asked me not to do this, that I would want Pfizer or Moderna because those are the mRNA vaccines. But
I think they're great options.
The other two will work, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So the viral vectors, the AstraZeneca and the Johnson & Johnson, they also have advantages, right? So the RNA vaccines right now, one of the main disadvantages is they have to be stored at really cold temperatures. So this means that they're not necessarily available everywhere. Whereas the AstraZeneca vaccine can be stored in the refrigerator. You know, it's like you could store it in your home. Every clinic has a refrigerator. Not every clinic has a negative 80 degree Celsius freezer to store an RNA vaccine in.
Okay.
So for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, the main advantage there is that it only requires one dose. So you can get a single shot instead of two, right? So saying that there's like the best vaccine, I mean, if there was one that was like really effective, you can store it at, you know, refrigeration, even room temperature, you only need one dose of it, then there would be a clear winner. But because, you know, they all really have different advantages at this point in time, honestly, they're all great options.
And these are not interchangeable, to be clear, right? Like if I was like, oh, I got the first Pfizer, but then I got a second Moderna, you cannot do that, even if they're both mRNA or both viral vectors.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, they might be, it might work. People are starting to look into this. We actually, while I was at Imperial College, did a study with the Oxford and AstraZeneca vaccine, combining RNA and viral vectors together to see if that boosts your immunity even further. But the problem is the way that they get approved is it has to be the approved regimen that they did in the clinical trials, right? So in all of these clinical trials, it was, you know, two doses of Moderna or two doses of the Pfizer and BioNTech. And so that's what's approved. Like that's what you'll get a prescription for. So it might be possible, but at this point in time, it's not available.
Got it. Okay. You know, do you feel, not to touch on kind of a dangerous subject here, but vaccines in general, over the past decade, this must make you so frustrated, have gotten a bad rap. In my opinion, having spoken to many, many doctors like yourselves, quite unnecessarily and to the great detriment of the general public, and please correct me if I'm wrong, do you feel this is creating an uphill battle in getting people to get out there and get the vaccine? Do you think, you know, I know a lot of people were suspicious because it was so heavily politicized about the speed in which the vaccine was created. And it's like, I don't know, they did this so fast, you know, this is. And I was wondering if you could speak to that and reassure people about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think what you're talking about is like, actually, you know, in the past year, we've become really focused on this idea of vaccine hesitancy. But as you alluded to, yes, this has actually been brewing over the past decade. And I think, you know, something I've come to realize and, you know, my real thoughts on it are that vaccine hesitancy is often portrayed as a very shameful thing. But I think it's actually great that people are questioning what they're putting into their bodies, right? Like,
fair.
You know, you are taking something that like you need to understand and decide if it's the best thing for you. But I think the main problem lies in that people have lots of questions, but they don't necessarily have people to answer their questions. So that's kind of, you know, my mission of being on TikTok is to be there and say, you know, if people don't understand it, like how can you expect them to feel comfortable getting a vaccine, right? And so, yeah, right. So for example, you
excellent
know, the question you asked about, is it rushed? I see this all the time on TikTok. And of course you see, so, you know, I think here's the most standard situation. You see some sort of headline or something in a news article that says it normally takes 5 to 10 years to develop a vaccine.
Yes! And
that is true.
Yes.
That is true. In normal times, it takes 5 to 10 years to develop a vaccine. But what that's failing to realize is that, you know, never in our lifetimes have all of the scientists and clinicians and funders and regulators all been focused on a single disease at the same time. Even me personally, you know, I usually have vaccine projects for 5 different diseases going on. And so when all of those people are focused on the same, you know, global pandemic, it's amazing what we can get done in such a short amount of time, right? So I think, you know, something that people don't really realize is that especially in research, a lot of time is just spent waiting for the funding to come in. Like, you'll put in a grant application and the money will show up 9 months later, you know, if you're successful in getting it the first time. So there's often a lot of just real like time delays that you don't necessarily need and could be skipped. But that doesn't mean that we are able to skip any of the steps that you need to approve it. So we still had to do all the phases of the clinical trial. So phase 1, 2, and 3, that doesn't change. That's just the nature of it. And, you know, it actually takes about a week to make a new vaccine. So, you know, if we didn't have to do that testing, we could have had a vaccine in like April of last year, but we had to do the testing and go through the clinical trials to prove that it was safe and effective in people.
You could have had one by April of last year?
Well, so
that's,
for example,
how fast you can do this job. Holy cow.
The making of the vaccine is not the hard part. It's the testing that takes a long time. So our vaccine, the formulation for our vaccine was decided in like early February last year. It didn't change since then.
Early February. We didn't even shut schools until March.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, we have to take a quick break. And when we come back, I have, lucky you, so many more questions.
That's great.
So, and I'm sure everybody listening does as well. We will be right back with Dr. Blakeney. So check this out. Over 3 million businesses worldwide use Indeed for hiring. And that's probably because, unlike some other hiring sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility. There are no long-term contracts. You can pause your account at any time, so you only pay for what you need. Indeed's Instant Match searches through millions of resumes in their database to show you a short list of candidates right away so you can meet and hire quality people. Plus, according to TalentRest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. You want your quality shortlist fast? You need Indeed. Right now, my listeners get a free $75 credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/Jillian. This is Indeed's best offer available anywhere. Get a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/Jillian. That's Indeed.com/Jillian. Offer valid through March 31st. Terms and conditions apply. If you're a business owner, you don't need me to tell you that running a business is tough, but you might be making it harder on yourself than necessary. Don't let things like QuickBooks and spreadsheets slow you down anymore. It's time to upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the world's number one cloud business system, and it gives you visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. It's everything you need all in one place, so there's no reason to pay for multiple systems that don't give you the information you need when you need it. So whether you're doing thousands, a million, or hundreds of millions in revenue, you're going to save time and money. Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/Jillian. Schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Jillian. NetSuite, netsuite.com/Jillian. We are back with Dr. Blakeney, and we are talking about the COVID-19 vaccines. Doc, next question is, I get the vaccine. You said 94 to 95% efficacy, but then what are these, quote, breakthrough cases? Like, after I get it, when am I immune? Why are some people getting it again? Am I still contagious, even if I don't show symptoms? So let's start with, after the last shot, when am I safe from getting it, and for how long?
Yeah, this is a great question. And actually, you know, we're getting more information about this all the time. So it's constantly being updated. So the main problem why we don't know exactly when yet is because we don't yet know what's called the correlate of protection, which is just a fancy way of saying, what levels do your antibodies need to be at so that we know you're protected from the vaccine, right? So theoretically, there's some number out there where it's like, if you're at like 1,570, like you're not going to get COVID. We don't know that yet, right? So when we're making a vaccine and testing them and looking at the efficacy, we're just trying to maximize that antibody level right now because, you know, maximizing it is the best we can do. So With the two-shot regimens, the reason you have to get that is because the immunity is just so much higher after the second vaccine, and that's how they were trialed and tested. So you start to see your antibodies come online 2 weeks after the first vaccine, but that your antibody levels peak 2 weeks after your second vaccination.
Oh, okay. I got it. So then another question for you. So I had COVID. And supposedly I got 3 months, then supposedly I got 6 months of some form of immunity with my antibodies. But then it becomes arguable, can I get it again? Do I have some form of, quote, functional immunity, which I don't fully understand, but maybe I guess it means maybe my body will recognize it and be able to make antibodies quicker. What happens if, like, with the vaccine, can my antibodies drop just like they can if I've had COVID? Do I need booster shots? Like, how long am I protected for? Is this something we're going to need to do every year like the flu? What can we expect? Or do we not know
yet? Yeah, great questions. Yeah, so I mean, the short answer is we don't know yet, but we have a little bit of insight to it at this point in time. So we know that from getting a COVID infection, a natural infection, you do get antibodies to it. A report came out last year that said, or I guess in the population that they studied, the antibodies lasted anywhere from 3 to 6 months after infection. So that means right. You'll have some amount of immunity for that time. You know, it's continuing to change. That was in one population. It may be different with, you know, different strains, different populations all over the world. But you do get some natural immunity to it. We don't know if that protects you from the getting, you know, infected, or how well it protects you from getting infected. So we now have seen cases where people have been infected. There have been confirmed cases of people getting COVID twice. So what needs to happen there is you get tested, you have a positive PCR test, you get over it, you have a negative PCR test, and then you get it again and have a positive PCR test. And so with testing so kind of rare, you know, not people aren't getting tested all the time regularly in the population. So I'm sure it's happened to, you know, a fair amount of people by now, but we do have some confirmed cases like that. So it seems that you can get it again. As far as how long it lasts with the vaccine, this is constantly being studied. And part of, you know, why they're approved for emergency use is that we don't know how long they last yet. So I think the last study I saw was a paper that was published by Moderna. And so, you know, they're constantly analyzing people who are in their clinical trials. Do they still have antibodies, and how long do they last for? And so in the Moderna paper, you could see they go up, they peak, and then they had measured them out to 6 months, and it was a very flat line across there. So it's clear that they're not going to just drop off at six months. So it does seem to be a longer lasting immunity, but we don't know. Eventually, it most likely will tail off. We don't know when that is yet. So it's something that's continuing to be studied.
Okay. Strains. Do the vaccines work on these variety of strains, or is that another, like, we don't know? Or could it be like, yes, you could get a breakthrough case, but the severity of your case will be lessened because you've had the vaccine?
Yeah, so this is where it gets quite complicated, because all the different vaccines, you know, you can study that. So basically what you do is you take blood from somebody that's had the vaccine, and you see how well it's able to neutralize or prevent a new mutation from entering cells. So this is just a study you can do in the lab and compare it to different strains, right? So we can do that. And really, you know, from what I've seen so far, like, these studies are definitely ongoing and changing all the time. But from what I've seen so far, it's not like a binary. Like, it's not like one strain changes it from being 94% effective to 0% effective.
Wow.
Maybe it goes from like 94% to 70% instead. And so it might be that there are more cases of people that have been vaccinated if another strain starts going around in the population. And so this is why it's really important, actually, for more people to get vaccines, because every person who gets infected acts as like a host for these mutations to happen and arise, right? And so the fewer people that get it, the fewer mutations that are going to be out there permeating society.
And that is herd immunity then. So that is how we're going to get to that number much more quickly,
via vaccination, obviously.
Exactly. Especially because, you know, like the herd immunity actually really comes from both these natural infections that does play into it, because those people we know now have some amount of immunity, and the vaccine. So it will come from, you know, people who have gotten infected, people who have gotten vaccines, and a certain percentage of the population being protected such that it's just not circulating as widely anymore.
Doc, the side effects, right? People, I'm sure you've, maybe you haven't because you run in a circle that's so well educated about this, but people are like, oh, you know, so-and-so got the vaccine and got so, so sick. And, oh, I don't know. And there's this inherent fear, obviously, due to a lack of knowledge, right? So can you explain to people why, when you get a vaccine, you can have a reaction? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, yeah, she got a fever. And, oh, man, you know, and they get scared. It's like, well, that's going to give me COVID. Could you kind of speak a little bit to what side effects you can expect and why they occur?
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally understand this. It's like, oh, like you get a vaccine and you get a fever, like that doesn't sound like an ideal option. But what I think it's important to remember is that actually what a vaccine is trying to do is trick your body into thinking it has a viral infection. And so your body has evolved all these mechanisms actually to recognize foreign viruses. And so then by introducing a vaccine, you just kind of trigger those same reactions. So you know, that is like, that's just the nature of it. Like you do have side effects in response to vaccines. And what I think is really interesting, and I think that some people don't realize, is you can actually go look up from these clinical trials, you know, what percentage of people got side effects. What were the side effects? How long do they last for? What were the most common ones? You can see that for all of the different vaccines. And so, you know, most commonly it's really just, you know, flu-like symptoms, right? You might get a fever or some sort of fatigue that is abated usually within 1 to 2 days. Sometimes people have more severe reactions, but they're really, really rare.
And if I don't get side effects, that does not mean it isn't working, correct?
Yeah, exactly. We don't, yeah, it doesn't mean that it's, you know, working or not, whether you get side effects or not, but it is just kind of the same, you know, we're trying to trick your body into thinking it has a virus. So it responds like that.
Okay. If I have underlying health conditions, can I get the vaccine? I see this one all the time. Can't, I mean, you can't, I'm not going to answer. You're the doctor. Is there anybody that needs to be concerned? Like, you know, is this for everyone? You know, I'll get to my kid question in a second, so we'll set that aside.
Yeah. So I'll just preface this by saying anybody who has questions about this, like, you know, each specific condition and, you know, underlying factor, you should talk to your GP about it, because they'll know your situation and be able to give you better advice. But in general, the only contraindication at this point, so people that shouldn't get it are for some of the vaccines are people that have had allergic reactions to vaccines in the past. So that's really the only thing out there. People often wonder, you know, people with like immune conditions where they're on immunosuppressants, can you get the vaccine?
Yes, actually, I see that a lot. Yeah.
And so actually the answer in most cases from what I've seen is yes. It's just that you may not respond to it as well as other people do. So if you're on immunosuppressants, that means like, you know, you're trying to tamp down that immune system. And so you just don't make as good of a response to the vaccine, but you can still get it.
Pregnancy. If I'm pregnant or breastfeeding, can I get the vaccine?
Yeah. So the guidance for this is also constantly being updated and changes a lot. So from what I have seen, you know, it's kind of also a personal risk and decision. But the way that I think about it, so now actually it's great because there are some of these bigger companies that are doing trials in pregnant women. And so that's, you know, really promising, because that will actually give us data to go off of to say, you know, about the safety and efficacy in this population. So, you know, it really just stems from initially we tested in kind of people that are lower risk categories. So we don't test it in pregnant women or children to begin with. It's usually people, healthy people ages 18 to 55. That's kind of the standard cohort. So for pregnant women, you know, I actually know a number of pregnant women that have gotten it. The real like risk here is what are your risks of getting COVID? What are your risks for any sort of side effects with the vaccine versus, you know, actually getting the virus? And so what I've seen recommended to most people is that it's fine to get it while pregnant. And actually the perk is then you generate the antibodies and then you pass it on to your baby, right, which is the most effective way to protect them from getting COVID early in life, right? So, you know, an infant's immune system isn't fully developed, so they actually aren't great at mounting an immune response, and it's not approved for them yet. So that's something to consider. But definitely, you know, again, ask your GP, right?
That brings me to my kid question. When do you think children will be approved for vaccination? Or are we looking at them thinking like, well, you know, these kids, my daughter had it and I think she sneezed once.
Yeah.
Are kids going to get approved for vaccination, or do you think it's just not a necessity for them?
Yeah, so they are now doing clinical trials, so like in pediatric groups, so under 18. Some of the vaccines are approved like 16 and above, some of them are 18 and above. And so as you've said, it's like we've seen that, you know, the people that get the most severe symptoms are actually the elderly, which is, you know, why it's being rolled out to those populations first. I think, you know, the clinical trials will tell us like how effective they are in kids and, you know, whether it's worth approving it for kids. I mean, it's interesting to remember that actually you get most of your vaccines in life as a kid. So,
right,
you know, it would just be introducing another one into that. But it depends on what the data says, you know, how well it actually works in children and how necessary it is.
Contagious. So I was hoping, you know, way before this all became a reality with vaccines, that we would be able to get this vaccine and we would get a little plaque or something. And you could, you know, you're free to go. It's like, you don't have to wear your mask. You can travel everywhere. And that's not the, I mean, maybe the travel, but that's not the case. You still have to wear your mask. And I'm hearing that you could still pass on the virus, even if you don't have symptoms of the virus. Is that true? Is that baloney? Like what's that?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So
what's going on with that,
yeah,
dog?
Help.
I want this off my face. I will wear it as long as I need to, but my God, it's like it's breaking me out. I mean, I get it.
Totally,
I understand.
Yep.
But
I
are
totally
we ever
understand.
Getting this off of our face? My God,
yeah.
The mask.
So I think this is actually really interesting to think about. And it has to do with the way that a lot of these phase 3 clinical trials were designed. So there's one paper that's been published for the AstraZeneca and Oxford vaccine where they actually looked at transmission in their clinical trial. And so the way that they test this for a clinical trial is if you're trying to prove that it reduces transmission as opposed to just severe disease, you have to be testing people all the time because we know that there are so many asymptomatic cases, right? So this is it's a huge undertaking and really expensive for a clinical trial. So most of the clinical trials, just like what qualified as a positive COVID case was presenting with symptoms and a positive PCR test. And we know that like that definitely didn't capture all of the cases, but it captured the really severe cases, which is what they were looking at for the clinical trial. So Oxford and AstraZeneca actually very interestingly made the decision to test people every single week. And thus they were able to catch, you know, these asymptomatic carriers and then also make claims about reducing transmission. So I forget the exact number off the top of my head, but it was something like it reduced transmission by 70%. So if you get the vaccine, it reduces your ability to transmit it by 70%. So we're getting more information on this. And of course, as more and more people get it in the population, we can study it from like an epidemiology standpoint. So it does, like, you know, we'll get there eventually. And I think it's just I see the light at the end of the tunnel. I hope other people are starting to see that as well, which is really just, you know, I think it's important to just take a second and realize, like, you know, we've been in this, like, the pandemic has been declared for about a year now. And we have approved vaccines that are being distributed to the population, you know, widely now. And that just like the fact that we were able to do that in a year as scientists is absolutely mind-blowing. Like I like to think back to like the 1918 Spanish flu, which I think was, you know, kind of the last time we went through like a global pandemic like this that everybody experienced, and how helpless we were as a society in being able to do things from it. It's like, we barely knew what a virus was. We didn't know how to make a vaccine for this. We didn't even know what type of virus it really was at the time. I heard on another podcast, actually, it was like the way they confronted it was like just like, you know, in the back pages of the newspaper. It was just like something like, oh, yeah, more deaths like over here, more deaths over there.
Sorry,
like
it's still
here. Whereas for us, it's like, yeah, obviously like front of the news every single day for the past year at least. But we know the sequence of it. We're able to know what mutations are going around in society. We're able to make a vaccine for it. We're able to do studies to see, do masks work? What actually reduces transmission, and being able to study it? And so I think, you know, we actually have to credit the scientists and all the scientists all over the world who have worked on it for being at the place where we are right now.
Speaking of Dr. Blakeney, I do want to thank you for everything you're doing, everything you've done, everything that you will continue to do, being on the show. And I was wondering then if you could give us a quick little recap. So it's like, all right, what are the steps I take? I contact my internist, because I also think people, and I don't want to get political, but people, no one knows really where to go. And I think it's confusing. And then there's lines, and then you hear they throw stuff out at the end. Like, what would you recommend is the best way forward to pursue getting the vaccine? After you have the vaccine, you still need to be safe, wear your mask, right, to protect people. And at the end of the day, it is a bit of a, it's a pain in the ass. I'd like it to be gone, but it's a small price to pay for your safety and the safety of other people. Like, what are the action steps we take from here then, specifically, would you recommend?
Yep, absolutely. So I think for me, and like how everybody should approach this is, you know, decide for yourself whether it's right to get a vaccine. You know, what is your risk? What is, you know, do you have any underlying health conditions? Do you have any reactions? If you need guidance, talk to your GP about it. And then as far as, you know, signing up for and getting the vaccine, that is more challenging, although I think it's getting better. So it's really just kind of, you know, that's going to happen locally for the most part in the States. Obviously, worldwide really depends on where you are, how that ends up happening. But, you know, it's a local thing. You'll get some sort of notification or be able to sign up. So, you know, keep your eyes peeled, keep yourself educated about how that's going to happen, where you are, and what you're going to need to do when that time comes. You sign up, you go get it. You know, don't forget, most of these cases, you're going to have to go back for your second injection. And for the time being, you know, the regulations right now are that for the most part, nothing changes. Although the CDC did release guidelines in the past week, which I believe that said after you get vaccinated, you're able to then socialize indoors with other people who have been vaccinated, which I was like, wow, this is the first government saying like, okay, here's like, you know, it's not perfect. You know, we're not back to normal yet, but right. It's a step in the right direction as far as recognizing that the vaccines do something and we have to also kind of let go of these really tight regulations at some point in time when it's safe to do so. So I think something that's really like interesting about masks, like I get just as annoyed about them as everybody else does. And I just can't wait for the day where, you know, I'm not like, it's not another thing you have to take on the way out.
I want to be able to smile at someone. It's the weirdest thing, but like I can't convey a tone without my face. And I think to myself, like, do they know that I'm trying to like, disarm them, or I'm trying to be kind, or it's the craziest thing to not have my actual face to disarm somebody or like be kind or show that it's
totally.
So weird.
I know.
I crippled. It's bizarre.
I completely agree. Like whenever I'm walking around, I usually like just smile at people on the street, and with a mask on, I'm like, do they just think I'm like squinting at them?
Right?
Like, can they tell I'm smiling?
It's like an email. Every interaction is like an email. Like I can't convey tone. It's the craziest thing. It's like, you know, and then I think, well, it's better that I'm, you know, God forbid, not killing somebody by passing this on, should I be asymptomatic or, you know, catch it again.
But something I think is
it works then. Yes.
Yeah. They do work. And the other thing I think is really interesting is that the data is starting to come in now about flu and the number of flu cases over the winter. And it looks like pretty universally, it's much lower than it has been historically. So that basically tells us that the masks were also somewhat effective at preventing flu transmission, right? So that's interesting because that, you know, pros and cons, it may mean that there is some sort of future for masks in prevention of infectious diseases. So I'm not sure. Like, hopefully we can find a happy medium where it's like,
right,
you know, we can use all of these social interactions and skills that we've, I guess, evolved to have over time and connecting with other people and being able to just live our lives.
Dr. Blakeney, you're amazing. Where can people go to learn more about your work or Team Halo? Hit them with the info.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to find more about Team Halo, we have a website, which is teamhalo.org. There's all sorts of scientists and clinicians from all over the world. It's quite an amazing group of people. So they all have TikTok accounts that you can find on there. If you want to follow me on TikTok, I'm at anna.blakeney. And yeah, really, like, I welcome any sort of questions, like, if people, about anything, really, like, I'm open in a no judgment zone. So if you have questions about anything, feel free to reach out in the comments. I'm pretty good about responding to people and or making videos to respond. So please do so.
Doc, thank you so much. You've been fantastic.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, my pleasure.